broadcasting live to the world the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's Wednesday, July 8th, 2009, the only July 8th, 2009 in the history of humanity, and the only third night of the Spring and Summer Pledge Drive 2009 ever. Welcome in on this Wednesday night. Glad to have you along for the ride. Glenn Klein online for night number three of the Gospel Revolution Spring and Summer Pledge Drive. And we want to welcome online from the home offices of the Gospel Revolution in Houston, Texas, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Good evening, Glenn. How is how's Tampa treating you today?
Got no complaints.
Well, that's a good thing.
I got a lot of questions, but I got no complaints.
Well, when you find out that sometimes you get your questions answered and nobody cares about your complaints, you can kind of let it go, eh?
Indeed. How are you?
You know, it's been been good. I feel well. I suppose it's up to others to decide whether they really think I am well or not in some areas. But for me, I'm doing good. Yeah, Houston is cooled off just a bit. In fact, I heard some thunder just a moment ago, and there's some clouds out there. So with any luck, we'll get some rain, which we desperately need. Oh, geez. For sure.
Well, you can have ours. It's been raining, as it does often this time of year in the Tampa Bay area, but it's been raining every day, but you can have ours.
Well, you know, Houston and up through Central Texas has been in severe drought for, I think, a few years now, actually. You know, 3, 4, 5 years, something like that.
So, well, we were too until summer hit, but that has.
You know, that's right. Florida was under. You know, God just really is always after Florida. I know that Pat Robertson thinks so, but so he's either trying to bake you guys, or drown you, or blow you away.
Because we have all those evangelicals down here.
I know, and if there's anything God don't like, we know it's an evangelical.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is night number three of the Gospel Revolution Spring and Summer Pledge Drive for 09, and we need your help. Our goal over these 21 days is to raise $12,500, and so far we've raised $7,525.17.
Yay!
Which we'll be talking about throughout the course of the evening. But we want your participation, your phone calls, your emails. For those that are listening live and it's a little after 9 o'clock on the eastern coast of the United States, please give us a call at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran in studio tonight with us, waiting to take your calls and hopefully your pledges. And for gifts of $100 or more, whether it be a one-time gift or a monthly donation that totals $100 or more, you will receive free and postage pay the 6-CD series in the twinkling of an eye, A View of History, which Michael just recorded in Calgary, Canada. Mm-hmm. And that's worth the donation right there. But
it really is. If you only took the dollar amount of it, it's that's a pretty sizable series with shipping and everything. That's $50 right there. But the information on this, Glenn, this is really a very well put together, and everybody knows that I can speak that way because I'm usually the one who's most impressed with what I'm saying, at least as much as the people, and a lot of times that it's things that I'm saying that that have never really thought about before, but this was a this took this particular phraseology, which that is the thing that I think that has caused us to be successful in the Christian community to the degree that we have been successful with the people that we reach, is that we don't change the terminology. We're not looking for a new religion. We're not looking for a new vocabulary. I think that the biblical vocabulary that is there is well worth paying attention to, and I think it's worth sticking to. It's just that we need to look at it in view of the scriptures, and we need to look at it in its context and its content. So, you know, this term, in the twinkling of an eye, actually only shows up one time in the entire Bible, but it's very specific what it's making reference to, as it is found in the 15th chapter of Corinthians on the subject of the first and the last Adam, and a whole lot of good stuff, which is all pointing back to the work of the cross. And so, yeah, the term the twinkling of an eye, we, you know, remember the ones that we went through where we established that the last vial of wrath being poured out was at the cross.
Right.
And then the last trump, we went through that, and that we determined it to be at the cross. Paul affirming in Hebrews chapter 12 that we have not come to the sound of a trump. That's not what calls us anymore. It's not the sound of a trump anymore for judgment or for gathering or any of those things, because the sound of the trump has been fulfilled through the work of Christ. And so this term just kind of crops up in the middle of all of that same type of terminology, in the twinkling of an eye. And oh man, when that finally that view of it as a view of history finally came to my mind, and we were able to put that together for that series. It is a marvelous series, that is for sure. I've heard back. Definitely from our friend Don Murphy, who's got the series put together. He says it's just the most fantastic thing he's ever heard. So we're looking forward to our first people to get that series is going to be the people who make this pledge drive effort a success. And we really do appreciate it for sure.
Well, we've had quite a bit of success during the course of the week in between the last webcast and this one. When we went offline last week, we were at $1,500, and since then, we've had a number of contributions, and we want to give thanks to those folks who were generous with their hard-earned money. We had Victor Brennan, who was the host of In the Twinkling of an Eye up there in Calgary.
Absolutely.
Came in with $250. James Forehand with $15 a month over the next 12 months, $180 from Texas, Corpus Christi. Pat and Richard.
Up to Dallas now. He moved.
I'll give you
an update. Yeah.
He moved to the Dallas area?
Yes, he did. All of his family was in just north of Dallas, and he upped and moved. He's been in Corpus Christi pretty much all of his life, raised his family there, and
wow.
They gone. So
well, still in Texas, though.
They're still in Texas, and actually they're closer to me.
Well, thank God for that. Pat and Richard Solomon from Wisconsin with $100. Robert Dixon. Where's Robert live?
You know, I don't have it in front of me. You caught me.
Robert, if you're listening, whether it be on the archive or live, email us and let us know. You need to send your address anyway, so we can make sure that you get your CD series with a $475 gift. Robert Dixon.
Yes.
And David Johnson from Alaska with a
$20. And I'm having to correct you on your locations. It's Scott Johnson who's in Alaska.
Oh.
And David, his brother, is in Illinois.
He's an Illinois boy.
Yes, he is.
Nice.
Where we fractured the churches there.
Many times over.
Yes, some never recovered. So,
David's been so consistent with his giving. We get these amounts that seem small and insignificant when they come in, but very much appreciated. But about weekly, we get a gift from David. This one came in for $20.17.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, 3 days later, we'll get something else in, you know, from David, and it's he's got figured out what he's doing, and because he gives amounts to the penny, and it always varies, so he's got some formula rigged up to where that he's decided what he's going to do, and he's doing it. And man, I tell you, that's we've talked about this before, and that consistency is extremely, extremely valuable. Believe me, it is. We appreciate that. I know that there's some that have made commitments and that have not followed through and not let us know, and that surprise can be very difficult in planning out a budget, as compared to our friend who called last week from down in Georgia. And goodness, Glenn, I'm trying to think of his name, who told us that he had made a commitment and he hadn't been able to do it, but he was still going to do it. And it's like, you know, that was just so refreshing, you know, to have somebody who knew that they were having a difficult time reaching that. But I thought it was awesome that the gospel presents that type of atmosphere to where that people can say, hey, you know, I'm not able to do this right now. Doesn't mean I've given up on it, but and called in live to talk to us about it. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. And we had a $5,000 one-time gift from an anonymous donor, which, of course, we greatly appreciate. They'll be getting the CD series, right?
Yes, I think I'll send it to them, yes.
So that brings us to a grand total of $7,525.17 as we head towards our goal of $12,500. And we have a week to go in this pledge drive, the Spring and Summer Pledge Drive of 2009. And now from Daytona Beach, Florida, we have Mr. Michael Cole. Michael!
Howdy.
How's it going?
Okay, how are you guys?
We're doing wonderfully. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Michael.
I thought I would be your Schneidgetter offer.
We appreciate it. It always takes that first caller to get us going, and we certainly appreciate you getting us off the Schneid.
And I was obviously hearing what you were saying, and I just wish my credit card companies were as grateful for my honesty as you guys were for his. But alas, no. I give $15 a month right now, and I'm going to up it to $25.
That's awesome.
Yes, sirree. And that will... That'll get you that series. See, it's like, it's kind of like on the installment plan. You get a $50 series for $15 for right now. So
I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be great.
And we want to hear back from you when you listen to it. Would you call back once you get
sure.
it and listen to it and tell us what your comments are?
Sure.
Awesome. We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, Mike, last time I called, you were wondering how I heard of you, and I told you it was through a friend who you hadn't heard of. But then, so I called my friend, and you might know a couple of these names then.
Ah.
So one of his friends is Van Gale.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
from the Chicago area.
Yeah, is... oh, dear Lord, when did Van Gale tell him anything about me?
I think this might have been in your Word of Faith days. That's how he first heard about you.
Yeah, because I would not have thought that this guy would be kind of saying anything about me anymore.
Yeah, anything nice anyway.
Not anything nice that I remember anyway. So.
And then, I don't know if you know Ken and Connie Shriver.
The name sounds familiar. Now, Van Gale and his wife, I remember speaking for there in the Chicago area, and it was, we hardcore Word of Faith, and they were hardcore prosperity Word of Faith. And he, I remember, was the one who had made comments about that if you drove an old car that was not bringing glory to God, that you should drive something along the Cadillac or something like that, at least brand. And then Van and his wife divorced, and his wife moved to the Virginias, West Virginia, actually, and her father built her an auditorium that seated, like, in this little country town, built her an auditorium that seated, like, I'm quite sure it seated at least, like, 2,000 or so, just because they believed that this was God, and invited me to come and speak for her after the divorce, and there was, like, 15, 20 people in the place. It was just kind of eerie, and I don't think that it was because I showed up. I think that was kind of the normal crowd. So just an update on the Van Gale situation. So, and I'm sure those people have all moved on and done something much greater and more wonderful than those days.
Yeah, I just wanted to see what those names meant to you and to kind of get back.
Oh, you got back so many flashbacks, I'm going to have to do some Hail Marys or something here. So,
a post-traumatic stress disorder.
No doubt. Oh, Jesus. Yep.
There's one other. Oh, and for anybody listening, I want everybody to know that Mike and Glenn tell the truth. There's no correlation between giving to your ministry and your personal finances. That is absolutely correct. But I love to give, so to you guys.
And that's the correlation, isn't it? The correlation is that
we've got
something that's good to say, and you love supporting it and giving. So,
yes, absolutely.
Good news.
Do you have any questions or anything for Michael tonight, Mike?
I don't think so. I listen to you guys all the time on the archives because my job is pretty much me in front of a computer, and so it's nice to hear familiar voices and talk to you instead of just listen to you. So it's nice.
Well, we appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, keep up the good work. And
well, we really appreciate it. All you got to do, Mike, is go to the gospelrevolution.com website and make another donation for $10 a month more. And
15.
And just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com and send me your mailing address, and we'll get the CD series out to you post haste.
Okay, so just email you, and that'll be from the website.
Yeah, go to gospelrevolution.com website, click on donations, and then just make a $10 a month more contribution. And then email at webcast@gospelrevolution.com your snail mail, and we'll get you out the CD series very quickly.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for getting off the schneid.
Take care.
There's Mike Kolb from Daytona Beach, Florida. That gets us
and even if nobody
40.
Knows what the schneid is, we're not on it anymore.
We're off the schneid.
We are.
For
I hate
evening.
Being on the schneid.
We're at 2645-17. Now we've got a line available for you to call at 1-800-436-3260. Who will be next? Calling the Gospel Revolution Spring and Summer Pledge marathon. It is a marathon. It's a 21-day marathon, Michael.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because it's much more than just the just our hour and a half. It's like you've explained to the folks. You know, we add the half hour to give us time to talk about raising the funds. Because we'll spend, and sometimes we don't even spend that much time talking about it because we want to make sure that we always get our hour in of just good old gospel news and conversation. And then, of course, the pledge drive continues even between the, as you can well see, it continues in between each show and will continue until this coming Wednesday. Even though this is our last pledge drive show that we're doing.
Right. You've got seven more days, folks. We know that, just like Mike Kolb, most of the people listen via the archives, which is great. We're happy to provide that service for you, obviously.
Absolutely.
And, but whether you're listening live or on the archives, we need your participation tonight. If you're listening live, we want to hear from you live at 1-800-436-3260. That line is available now for you at 1-800-436-3260. Or just go to gospelrevolution.com, click on donations, and make your best donation via PayPal there. And then do email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com so we can count your pledge towards the goal. And also, for gifts of $100 or more, get that CD series, In the Twinkling of an Eye, A View of History, out to you as quickly as possible. Michael, this letter came in. They say, I just recently became a member of Gospel Revolution. I've been devouring Mike's teachings. I walk my dog every day for an hour and listen on my MP3 player to the teachings. The gospel Mike proclaims, which in my heart is the true gospel, has brought such perspective and purpose and peace to my heart. I now believe in Christ more than when I was required to believe.
Mm.
The gospel is powerful unto salvation. Mm. Of course, as my heart accepts the gospel, my head keeps bringing more and more questions to mind. I just recently started listening to this broadcast and have heard Mike answer listeners' questions, so I decided to email one of the questions that I've been thinking about. My question is, since Christ was the second Adam, as Paul brings up in Romans 5, doesn't that necessitate that the first Adam was a real human being and that the Genesis account of creation should be taken literally? I would love to hear Mike's understanding on this thought. Again, Mike, keep proclaiming the truly good news that Christ is the Redeemer of the whole world. Thank you for your ministry. And that's from Shane Turk of Groveland, Florida. Florida being heard from tonight all over the place.
Yes, we have, and that's always good. Well, it's no secret. I do believe that Adam was the first human, and and the comparison of the first Adam and the last Adam is a is a spectrum of time, if you will, between the two, and an understanding of the failure of one and the success of the other, the fall, if you will, of the one and the other being raised up and seated in heavenly places. And the entire human race, whatever happened to the first Adam, happened to all that came after. And whatever happened to the last Adam has happened to the entire human race and all that come after, except the interesting thing about the work of the last Adam is his work was retroactive and even covered the first Adam. So and statements such as that he was slain from the foundation of the world and things that gives that implication. I was listening to the evening news today, and it's difficult for me when I hear people who are of political persuasions that are so out of step with anything that I think, and then them to come on the air and talk about there being, you know, that the Earth has been here for 6,000 years. And they are so laughable, so many of them, in other areas, that, and then making a comment like that, and it's like, well, yeah, but everybody then, of course, goes into just ridiculous mode, is that anybody could possibly believe that at least the human race has been here for just 6,000 years. And this is, you know, there's a couple of facts. The one thing is that all we have of recorded history is 6,000 years. The record of that 6,000 years gives us a order from a created being. And everything else that takes history back further than that is based on different types of tests of carbon dating and things such as that to gauge the life existence, which if you study into any of that, there's so many holes in that, in those things to evaluate the age of something. I've just never, Glenn, I've just, I'm perfectly open to believing that man evolved from a, you know, some little bit of slime somewhere, you know, billions of years ago. There's two problems with that. Number one is what I see just does not seem to validate that, with the number of species and the human race being so different than any other species that's on the Earth, and then the multiple billions of species of different things that are on the face of planet Earth. You know, they just look so desperately for that, quote, missing link. And they come up with something here several months ago that was so non-impressive, you know, that they would, that, and they admitted they've been looking for the missing link, but what they said that they had found that was it was just nowhere near verifiable. So until the theory of evolution, not the fact of evolution, but the theory of evolution has something more to offer me. There's a lot of people that are satisfied with the quote, the science of evolution. They're quite satisfied with it, even to the mocking of those who would possibly think something differently. But that's not the first time in history that that has happened. But until there is something offered to me that is substantially better than what evolutionary theory has presented, I'm sticking with my story. You know, I believe that God is a creator, and that He created this, and I do believe in the first human being. You know, I'm an avid genealogy researcher now. I love doing this. And the one thing that you'll find out about genealogy is that in all of the research is, and I think you've mentioned this before, is that when you stick to just that and the DNA of all of the, such a thing as a genealogical research, is that DNA says we all came from one set of parents.
Right.
That we are all related back to some point. And so, you know, that it bothers me that I have to explain that I'm not narrow-minded about this, because I know that I'm not narrow-minded about it, but it seems that there's been such a propaganda to make evolution the norm that that people who embrace it don't really embrace it because of the facts they know. It's because of the stories and the theory that they've heard. So, yeah, I think that that the history of the planet, and based on a lot of different ways of testing the age of this, not only of our planet, but the human race itself and the history of the human race, that it it points much more closely to something under 10,000 years of the existence of the human race on this planet.
But to Shane's question specifically, because that Jesus is called the second Adam, does it necessitate that the first Adam was an actual human being? Is it necessary to take the biblical story literally?
Well, first off, let me say this. It doesn't say that he was the second Adam. It says he's the last Adam.
Right.
I'm not sure then that I'm understanding the question that...
if the story of Jesus is legitimate, uh-huh, and that the comparison to Adam being the first Adam with Jesus being the last Adam, is it necessary that there was an actual Adam versus it just being a parable or a foreshadowing?
Yeah, and of course we've talked about that. The other possibility is, and of course this whole issue about Jesus and redemption is based on the book of Genesis and its validity. Now, that could be its validity as a story created to bring us to a conclusion, or the validity of it as it actually being an actual fact. One of the two is true. And the only reason that I would believe that the other one was true is if there's some possibility that evolution would play into this in some way. So, I'm definitely open to that possibility of there being something that we don't understand. I mean, you know, I very readily and am glad to admit that I wasn't there. So all we have is this document to go by, for sure.
But doesn't it disturb you at least somewhat to be in agreement with our evangelical brothers and sisters who... I was going to pick up our youngest daughter, our youngest child, Gracie, today, and I went by a church, and it said, "Are you lost? Then let the Bible be your GPS," the church sign said. And
yeah.
It was a very disturbing sign, of course, knowing, first of all, that the Bible is not in its entirety the Scriptures, and understanding what the Scriptures actually are. But,
well, it doesn't bother me any more than to agree with my evangelical brothers that Jesus is the Son of God, that he was born of a virgin, that he physically lived and was crucified, and that he rose from the dead, which all of those things are mocked by not only people who are atheist and of other beliefs, but it's even we sat in here in Houston and heard my friend Carlton Pearson mock those points, at least two of them, the virgin birth and the crucifixion, was in essence mocked, and Carlton was raised believing that all of his life. And who knows, you know, maybe Carlton's embarrassed to link himself with his evangelical roots to the point, but to that point, I don't know his heart. I know that I am not going to base what I truly believe in my heart to be the truth based on whether a certain group acknowledges it or not, or would ridicule or affirm it. So,
but
yeah,
you literally believe in the story of the Red Sea parting. You literally believe in the story of Noah and the Ark. You literally believe that Joshua marched around Jericho and the walls fell without a shot being fired?
Yeah, I do. I do. And again, that is either a fact, especially those things that are written in Genesis, they are either a fact or they were given as things that would give us, a direction. But see, here's the thing, Glenn, is that's not the most shocking thing and the most defying thing that's ever happened to natural law that I believe. I believe Jesus Christ died dead and rose from the dead. So a wall falling down or by a power the Red Sea parting, I don't see as quite as substantial of a miracle as the death, the burial, and the resurrection of a man. And
then why doesn't stuff like that happen anymore?
Well, I don't know. I believe that all of these things happened to bring us to a much more powerful state, and that is one of freedom. And that as I've talked to people before, you know, this is the whole crux of this matter, is that it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. It is not so that God can take charge over the planet and part seas and do all of these things. We've even talked about it as far as healing is concerned. Do I believe that it is possible for someone to be healed? Of course. I think there's a whole lot of things that are possible. But the fact is that most all that we hear of that are healings are definitely things that can be explained. Remission from cancer is not healing. It's remission. The plane, you remember our caller that was so furious and just refused to ever listen to us again because I had the audacity to refute that it was a, quote, miracle, the landing on the Hudson. You'd think if a miracle happened, everybody would be happy enough just with a miracle. Now all these folks are suing the airlines. So, somebody's not happy enough with a miracle, so... But I don't think it was a miracle that brought that plane to its safe landing. I don't think that God did anything to bring that other than give us the freedom to create, to learn, to grow, to dedicate, commit, and to what it is that is our life's passion and pleasures. And those people brought that plane down, and that well-trained captain brought that plane down, and I don't see any necessity for those things to happen anymore. I even see the miracles that Jesus did was not given so that we would know that God can do miracles. It was given to prove that miracles don't make a believer out of you. Because even after all of the miracles that they all saw, they still went into unbelief and they denied him, even the disciples, and particularly the disciples, if you will. So, and of course, my view of how things are now is based on it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. And the power of God in my life is measured by the degree that he has given me the wherewithal to work through my situations and to survive and to go on and to move through those. And through the power of the gospel, all human beings have been given this incredible ability to suffer loss, to endure it, and to recover from it. And then if you experience the ultimate loss, which is your own life, it's not a loss at all anyway in the long run. But this is where I think that the health, that healthy heart, is just like the letter that you just read. It's given, as he said, it's given in perspective. There were three P's there. I can't remember what they were. But it does. And I think that one of the greatest paralyzing forces to walking in the truth of the gospel is people who have been taught to sit back and wait for God to do something. And even within the gospel revolution, we have people who still believe that way. Now, I have no problem with them, because in the end result, it's not an issue. But as far as the being able to answer this question, why did those things happen then, and they don't happen now, unless we fabricate something to being a miracle, such as the miracle on the Hudson, or the child that survived the plane crash and hung on to the debris in the ocean for 12 hours. I think we're robbing ourselves by sitting around waiting for the miraculous, when the truly miraculous has proven to be within. Look at the advancements that doctors has made to be able to treat. I mean, one of my favorite charities to contribute to is St. Jude's, and look, because those people are free, and but you see, you've got to be free from waiting for God to do something to pursue an answer and a solution to a problem. As we were talking about Pastor Van Gale from Chicago, it did bring back a flood of memories. And all of that old mindset of wondering what was God's will, or what would the Lord do, what does he want to do, what does he want me to do, what does he not want me to do, and the paralysis of that, mind, heart, and soul, is just more than I could live with. And I think that the creativity that we have does come as an inspiration of God within us. It has been a great deal of the people who have been inspired and have done great things are people who do believe in God. But it's not because they're sitting back waiting for God to do something. They feel compelled from their heart to do it, and they accomplish great things.
This is Glenn Klein online. This is night number 3 of the Gospel Revolution Spring and Summer Pledge Drive. We're asking you to participate tonight by calling 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. If you're listening live and online, and it's about quarter to the hour of 10 o'clock on Wednesday night, you're listening live. We want to hear from you live at 1-800-436-3260. Your calls and contributions are very much needed. 1-800-436-3260. If you're listening on the archive, your donations and questions are welcome. All you got to do is go to the gospelrevolution.com webpage, click on donations, and then make your best contribution there. And we will receive that via PayPal. And for gifts of $100 or more, you will see free and postage paid the brand new teaching series, the 6-CD series, In the Twinkling of an Eye, A View of History, that Michael just taught in Calgary, Alberta. And that will get out to you quickly. You just got to make your donation for gifts of $100 or more, whether it be in a one-time gift or in monthly donations totaling $100 or more, you will receive the series. And then just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com and let us know what you did, and we'll get that series out to you very, very soon. 1-800-436-3260. Right now, as of night number three, with a week to go in the spring and summer pledge drive, we're at 2645-17. We've heard from Michael Kolb tonight from Daytona Beach, and we want to hear from you. We need to hear from you at 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran waiting in studio to take your call, your question, your pledge. Michael online to talk with you. 1-800-436-3260. Did you catch the Michael Jackson memorial yesterday?
Yes, I did. Anything like that in our culture that's going on, I'm glued. And I thought it was quite interesting.
There was a heavy religious component to it.
Definitely was.
Especially from Martin Luther King Jr.'s daughter.
Yeah, well, it was laced pretty much all the way through it. I couldn't... I don't know if you saw Stevie Wonder's performance or not.
Yes, Stevie Wonder was
and,
great.
And it was a bit puzzling. You know, I've been told that Stevie Wonder is one of those who's embraced the gospel of inclusion. But boy, his song certainly didn't say that he embraced the gospel of inclusion, because he was singing about Michael Jackson, and he was singing, "Where you have gone, they cannot go." And so it's like, okay, well, who are they that can't go, and where does he believe Michael went that there is some group that can't go the same place he did? That's not very inclusive. I think the thing that I was my heart was most drawn to was that in all of the Michael's great eccentricities, to put it mildly, that in all of that and all of the fortune and the fame, that basically when it got right down to it, there was a mother and father that lost a son. There were some brothers and sisters that lost a brother, and three children. No matter how unconventionally they were brought about, lost a father, and regardless of how expensive the casket was or the condition of the body, which all of that's coming out now, which of course that is the price that you pay for celebrity, is that people don't want to know just the things that you want to support your celebrity. Everything about you becomes celebrity. So it was very moving, it was very touching. Jennifer Hudson, of course, just hearing her sing anytime, I mean, she has such a powerful voice, it's just amazing. I really loved loved Smokey Robinson's time that he had, and him talking about the song that Michael did, about that Smokey wrote, and then this 10-year-old kid, he said he was going to check and see his birth certificates. How can this 10-year-old kid sing with the heart? Of somebody that's done his lover wrong, has done so wrong that lover left him, and now he's brokenhearted, but it was, that was very good at moments that were very lighthearted. But in final
analysis, Mike Klein online. That's Michael Williams of the Gospel Revolution. Night number 3 of the Spring and Summer Pledge Drive. I think I said we were at $26.45. We're at $7,645.17. Can't forget about our $5,000 anonymous donation. And we want to thank everybody who's participating, even who are listening on the archive that are about to go to gospelrevolution.com and make a contribution by clicking on donations. And now we want to welcome online from Cleveland, Tennessee, your old stomping ground, Michael.
Uh-oh. Is it
Mr.
normal?
Jeff Robertson. Jeff!
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing
hey,
great.
Jeff.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I was just listening. You guys touched on a subject that I have a lot of curiosity about, and like Mike says, I think there's so much in the book of Genesis that we can discover about the gospel, and through the gospel, I understand it maybe better. But I have a college degree. My minor was environmental science, and I never really was afraid of science trying to prove what I believed wrong. I always found that as we learn about things, it seems like science only proves the historical creation of the Earth correctly. I mean, it started out as a void or a primordial ooze, then came, you know, separation of the waters and land formed, which science has proven that those were the progressive steps. And even in Genesis, Moses wrote that these were the generations in which they occurred when he talked about those days, you know, and even the word day is a Hebrew word for era or epoch, you know. So I think what we've found, the scientists out there who are jaded because they were, you know, they were damaged by what they heard from the church.
Absolutely.
And I think there's a lot of people in the church who are jaded because they think somebody's trying to tell them something that's against what they believe. We've lost so much knowledge over centuries. The Babylonian Empire had knowledge we still don't know about, we're just learning about. They had electricity, they had flight. Apparently they had some medical marvels that we still can't accomplish. So, I don't know, is everybody there?
Yeah, the Babylonians flew?
Yeah, there is evidence now that the Babylonians had some sort of flight. Some sort of like hang gliding flight. And I think they even had lighter than air vessels. And they had batteries, things like that, for electricity. They generated electricity.
Really? Where'd you hear about that?
Well, you know what? My major was international studies, which is it's a humanities degree, so there's a lot of history involved and stuff like that. So, but I think the crux of the issue is if as we learn in science about this Earth and about humans, I think we're going to, the odds are better, we're going to match it up to what the Bible says as opposed to disagreeing with the Bible. Because, you know, at one time they thought the Earth was flat, and even Solomon knew it was round.
Right.
So knowledge comes and goes over the course of human history, because societies, they rise and they collapse, and with the collapse you lose technology, you lose knowledge, you lose a lot of that. And if you read Genesis, even it appears as though, according to biblical history, that until Noah it never rained either.
Yes,
and we're just learning that under an atmosphere like that, which there were periods in the Earth's development where we have learned that the atmosphere was definitely different. And but if it didn't rain, then the atmosphere was under a different pressure, and of course ultraviolet rays were being filtered, and things live longer. UV rays are what age us, and we also live longer under a different pressure. So And there's been shifts in the North and South Poles a few dozen times. There's been magnetic shifts in the Earth. Those could all be how we judge a year or time. So I think there's a whole lot to discover, and I don't think anything will ever disprove the scriptures.
I was just watching something, Jeff, just night before last. You know, I remember 30 years ago, with just biblical understanding, that it was being taught by creationists that the dinosaurs all became extinct in a cataclysmic event.
Uh-huh.
And that was just common teaching on creation because of exactly what you had said. And I got a hold of a little book entitled Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Dinosaurs. And very enlightening. It's the first time I realized that reptiles grow throughout their lifetime. And given the opportunity, as man did, to live 1,000 years, a reptile growing that long, we're going to have dinosaurs.
Right.
But the interesting thing is that 30 years ago, the evolution was still teaching strictly on the survival of the fittest. They were not teaching any cataclysmic event at all that brought the dinosaurs to an instant end on the face of planet Earth. And last night or night before, I watched one, and they now are saying that it was a meteor that hit off of the east coast of the United States that blanketed the Earth, that killed all the dinosaurs at once.
Right. So that's very possible. Yeah.
So now they at least, like you said, they are not disproving. But they also said that it would have, that the heat from this would have vaporized these dinosaurs, and we're not finding vaporized dinosaurs. We're finding, you know, dinosaurs that are intact, and some of them even with their skin, you know, still intact.
Right. Now, when I got my degree, and here's the interesting thing, when I got my degree, that meteor impact actually, because of the impact, actually would cover the entire Earth in such a cloud that and the cloud wouldn't dissipate for at least a year or two, and the Earth would go into a deep freeze.
Absolutely.
Because it's not getting any exposure to sunlight whatsoever, and so the atmosphere would be subject to whatever the temperature is outside the globe, which, you know, it's just freezing cold out there. So anyway, the dinosaurs most likely froze to death. Not only that, with the earthquakes and everything that happened from such an event, you know, there's a lot of death that way too. But it's funny also, because we've probably been hit more than once, because we've found humans as well as almost fully intact woolly mammoths that were frozen in ice. And that has to be through a sudden freeze, and only something like that could bring, well, actually, there's a couple things that could bring that about. But they're all provable that they can occur. And
well, I agree with you. I think science is coming closer and closer to, you know, without even their being witting to it, but it is definitely is coming closer and closer to a Genesis account.
Right, and I see that, and that's why, and many scientists that I know are by no means, there are some, like I said, there are some scientists out there who are literally bitter against religion, and we can understand why.
Oh, yeah.
And again, there's some Christians out there who are bitter against scientists because when they do find a provable fact, Christians are scrambling to try to somehow debunk it. And I don't think either side, first of all, there shouldn't be sides, but
yes.
I don't think either side needs to have, and I think it's all fear-based, and I don't think either side needs to be afraid of the other. And, but actually, I sent an email earlier today because I didn't think I'd get a chance to listen. And even though this is all fun to talk about, last week, I listened to it on the archive, and the two things that I came away with that have just been, you know, revolving in my head, two things that you said were, one, you were talking about that Paul said that the gospel is the power of God. The other thing, and that stayed with me all week, and the other thing, I'm trying to remember now, I sent an email a few hours ago because I was hoping to listen to this on the archive. What did you say? But yeah, the gospel is the power of God. And not only that, that we are, as far as our spiritual identity goes and who we are in the spirit itself, we are made perfect and, I guess, full, complete. We are completed. We are complete. Yes. Those two things are very powerful, and I don't think I can ever hear enough about them.
Well, that's
Jeff,
how
did you hear about the gospel?
I'm a graduate of New Life Bible College. I've known Mike for I'm probably an enigma to Mike, but Mike and I have met a few times. We have a few mutual friends, Jackie and Clifton Patial.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
And, I relayed a message to Mike through Jackie, actually, because our mutual friend Clifton passed away a while back.
Yes, he did. Yeah, I was very sad to hear that.
Yeah, I was devastated. It was tough. But, so Mike and I have talked over the years a lot, mainly because of Clifton. Clifton would come by sometimes, and I would actually need Mike's help in helping Clifton. I'm probably an enigma, I'm sure, with all the people he meets.
I remember that. Yeah, those were very poignant moments for sure.
Yeah.
And of course, when you have somebody like Jackie as a binding point, you're pretty well stuck together the rest of your lives, you know.
That's true.
Which we're I've been trying to get her down to the convention. She's got to get down. We've got to tell her whole story. That is a gospel revolution story right there, all rolled up in one.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, and I think she's too busy living her story right now to tell it.
She is living it. She doesn't care what anybody thinks.
Right.
For the first time in her life, how about that? That's so awesome.
Right. Yep, it is awesome. I can tell you this. The gospel that I'm hearing from you now, because I used to listen to you at New Life, and it was always wonderful. Back when I listened to you at New Life, you were still, that's when you were really pushing the grace message, and your thinking was evolving.
Yep.
And it was wonderful to listen to at least the beginning of it, you know. Unfortunately, through my experience during those years, I kind of lost touch because I actually embraced the gospel probably 10 years before that in my teens, because I had come up with religion, heavy religion in a sick family, and I went to Europe and got away from my family and got away from my church. My nickname was Billy Graham at church because I was a preacher. I loved Bible verses. I loved knowing the Bible. I loved but at the same time, nobody knew. Inside, it was killing me. The whole thing was killing me. And I was just reading Paul the other day, so he said it was killing him. And while I was away in Europe, I left my Bible at home. But I got close to God, and that's where everything started becoming clear. This gospel was coming clear. My identity in Christ was becoming clear. I started realizing it was no longer me who lived, but Christ who lived in me. And it was wonderful. And I'm just now trying to piece it all back together again. Because I went through, like I said, I went through quite a heavy indoctrination through the full gospel stuff and everything, and I kind of feel robbed. I feel like I lost years of my life because of it and stuff.
Where'd you go in Europe, Joe?
I lived in Hamburg, Germany, and I lived there for 13 months as an exchange student. I was 16, And the most awesome thing that changed my life was I was living with a family. Most northern Germans are atheists, and my family was no exception, but they had three boys, and there was so much love in that family. And at first, I didn't fit in, and I got homesick. And I realized I got homesick for a sick home. A very religious home, very controlling mom, whole nine yards. So I got on my knees, because I didn't know what to do, because I was wanting to go home. I got on my knees, and I said, "Father, help me." And in that moment, in my heart, I felt my faith, and my faith felt familiar. And I was like, this is something that's familiar to me. Everything else here is so foreign and strange to me, but this is familiar. And I said, I'm going to stick it out here because I've got my faith, and if I'm miserable, I've got my faith, and that's familiar to me. And you know what? I held on to my faith, and all those Bible verses that used to kill me turned around and gave me life. I learned to accept myself, love myself, and in that process, I learned that God loved me and that nobody was in condemnation anymore. Nobody walking the earth was in condemnation. And that family that didn't, that had no religion, didn't believe in God, had more love in their little finger than anybody I knew stateside, let alone my Christian family. And that amazed me, that a family could have so much love, because I always thought, you know, love is, and, you know, Christians are love, and of course that's what they're supposed to be, how they're supposed to be recognized as disciples, is by their love for one another. And then this family had more love than them, and they didn't even believe in God. And that's when I realized they didn't judge, and they had no care about, you know, where they'd be going in the afterlife. They didn't have any care about, you know, impending doom of an apocalypse of some sort. And they didn't judge anybody else. They had no judgment. And so I adopted that mindset and found out that, and that's what really released me to receive the gospel. And it did come to me spiritually, because there's no way you can figure this out in your head.
Yeah.
It's just no way. It's just that the Bible verses that I knew so well, that used to really kill me, all of a sudden were just inverting and coming alive to me. And they told me that not only was I loved and not condemned, regardless of how I was, what I believed, what I thought, what I didn't think, it told me the whole world was, too, and that nobody was in danger of eternal damnation or anything else.
Can you think of any verses that used to condemn you that brought life?
Oh, everything. You know what? One thing I realized is not only was the law something that hovered over my head, I made everything from Genesis 1 through the end of Revelation law. Anything, any fragmented sentence command or anything that was said by anybody in those pages instantly became a law to me. And if I did not live up to it, I was hopelessly dreadful. I couldn't live up to anything. You know, it's like, forgive your brother. If you try living up to that, you can't forgive a single soul. I even got to the point, because when I was at New Life Bible College, I got into so much law and condemnation, I was deceived. Something got a foothold in me, because this was after I had received the gospel. And I run into all these people, and they seemed to have a vocabulary that I just was unfamiliar with, and they seemed like they knew more than me. So I thought, well, maybe I was wrong, you know? Oh, that was the worst thing I could have ever accepted, was that I possibly was wrong. They were right. Because I was under so much condemnation. I got to the point where I tried making myself believe that Jesus was the Son of God, and I'll be damned, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. There was no way in the world I could believe he was the Son of God, because I was trying to make myself believe. You know, I just couldn't do it. And that's when I realized that I was like, you know what, I remember this from somewhere in my past, and I just, it's something wrong. And then one day I was just thinking about it. I was in the second year of Bible college, and I was like, you know what, I got to look at all this stuff again for myself. And I was going through the Bible, and I had headaches galore from all of it. And one morning I woke up, and I just remembered Jesus said, "It is finished." And I got out of my bed, and I said some of the most unholy things, but I was like, those SOBs over there don't know, you know, a bit of what they're talking about, and I could use some more colorful words. I said, everybody's okay. They don't know what the heck they're talking about. And I just walked and left it all behind.
My goodness.
You didn't say heck, though, did you, Jeff?
Pardon? No,
you
I didn't say heck. No. It was much more colorful. Yeah.
Nor SOBs.
SOBs actually putting it a little mildly, too.
I appreciate everything that you've said, Jeff. It's we could go through and talk about it on several shows now because you brought up so many wonderful, wonderful points. But I think the thing that was most pertinent to me was you talking about the very verses that condemned you now brought you life. And we were actually talking about that just before, about the... And we've talked about it actually the last couple of programs, that my desire to not change Bible terminology but leave it as it is and read it in context, because the desperate need is for those who believe those verses out of context. You don't need to change the verses. They need those verses explained to them. And they need to be explained within a chapter, within a book, within a context. And a content that has something to do with it, just like the series that we've got in the twinkling of an eye. I mean, we didn't change that. We went in, and what an amazing thing that I get to entitle an entire series "In the Twinkling of an Eye: A View of History."
Exactly.
Because how would we reach the Christians, which my heart goes out to the Christian community. I guess because, and I'm sure this is true with all three of us on this on the call right now, is that we know what it's like to so desperately look to those verses for life and for salvation and for peace, and it be the very source of our demise mentally and emotionally.
You know, I have one more thing that's coming to mind, and I hate to interrupt, but I do have to bring it up, because looking back at that experience, the funny thing was, is if you remember, I left my Bible at home, but of course, my Bible was inside of me, and it was, and I was trying to basically, I did a good job. I ignored everything I knew in the Bible, because when I decided to live there and stay there, and I held on to my faith, and as I was holding on to my faith, I was living life, and I was learning to live by faith. It's like, you know, I'm going to override these emotions of homesickness and all this other stuff, and that's where I discovered that I had some stinking thinking and stuff that you know, I got from my childhood. So as I was discovering these things and putting them aside, I was growing up. I was maturing as a person. I'm not saying I was growing spiritually, because I was discovering actually who I was spiritually. The spiritual me inside was getting a chance to break free, and I was discovering me, that born of the Spirit, that child born of the Spirit of God, that child of God. I was discovering me, the child of God. During that process, because I was ignoring all the Bible verses that used to kill me, I was ignoring me, and I had to do that, really, to live by faith. I had to ignore those things.
Yeah.
And as I was discovering myself and learning to love, then Bible verses were opening up to me. I'd remember them, they'd open up, and they were life-affirming to me. They were affirming that the life that I was now living and discovering, and the identity I was discovering, they were all affirming to me that this was the everlasting life, the eternal life, the abundant life that was won for me. And that was actually the process for me. It was ignoring, I had to literally ignore all the Bible verses as I understood them, live by faith, you know, and we are literally witnesses to Christ in our own life. If we just witness us becoming free from stuff like that, if we witness it, then those verses that once hurt us will return to us life affirming. I started realizing the kingdom of heaven was within me, and it was alive in me. And then I remembered that, you know, Jesus said that. And you know who he said it to? He said it to a Pharisee that he was cussing out. It's like, the kingdom of God is within you. And he said it to a hypocritical viper Pharisee. You know?
So it's kind of like, listen, you SOB, the kingdom of God is within you.
Right. They're thinking, you know, he's supposed to land it somehow in a mothership from heaven. And it's in them, you know? Oh, my God.
Did you ever share, Jeff, with your German host family any of these things?
No. You know what? For the first few months, because, you know what, and I didn't like my host brothers at the beginning, and then once I started chilling out and all my Christian judgment went out the window and everything, we became very close, and I loved them. And during that time, I was still, you know, concerned about the eternal security thing. And so I started becoming very concerned about their spiritual eternal security. And shortly thereafter, thank God, I didn't have to worry about that anymore. And so they knew that I believed in God. And I knew that they didn't, and so we kind of left it at that. But I learned so much more from them, and in the years past now, because I still keep in touch with my youngest brother, they did. They learned quite a bit from me, too. So the one thing they learned is how somebody can grow in love.
Well, we've learned a lot from you tonight. Don't be a stranger, okay?
Well, I, you know what, I listen to the archives because I myself, you know what, I read Matthew just, you know, 2 weeks ago, and I was doing great with it, and then I came along, you know, a couple verses, and I'm like, oh, how come this is like a square peg in a round hole? You know, I still run into verses that trouble me, just like, you know, the person who wrote that email in. You know, they were talking about how they run into verses here and there that, you know, they struggle with. And, you know what, take my advice as a 16-year-old little kid who just had to ignore verses. Just, you know, hold on to what you believe. Those verses are going to flip around anyway.
That's a good point. You know we're on for 90 minutes tonight for the pledge drive. Did you want to participate tonight?
You know what? I'm like, what's his name from Georgia? I already have a pledge that I have already calculated how far I'm behind on. I'm unemployed right now, actually. So I was living in Cocoa Beach. I was running a hotel down there, and this is actually the second time I think I've been on your show, maybe the third.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you called from down there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. But, yeah, I do. You know what? And I've got friends of mine now, church-going folk, that I've got them listening to your archives, and they've downloaded everything you've got, and they're going to a church. And I've been to church with them a few times, and we just kind of, when something's said, we just kind of glance over at each other, smile, and, you know, glance back. It's like, you know what, they're where they're at, and if we ever get it, the funny thing is you don't want to say too much, because you know what, you're just going to blow the church, it's just going to collapse if you say too much, because somebody's bound to believe you, you know?
Somebody's bound to believe you.
You know,
that's our new slogan, the gospel revolution, somebody's bound to believe it.
Somebody's bound to believe you.
It's true. You know what? You get a few of them believing it, and the next thing you know, a little leaven leavens the whole loaf, and the whole damn thing falls apart. You know?
Well, let us hear. Your contribution has been invaluable tonight, and let us hear from you again.
Well, I love talking about it. How can you not?
All right, Joe.
For sure. All right, guys. You have a good night.
Thanks, buddy.
Love you.
All right, love you too. Bye.
Jeff Robertson from Cleveland, Tennessee. Michael's old stomping ground. Norval Hayes neighborhood.
Yeah, I thought maybe Norval was on tonight. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be something?
Thought he might have a question.
have a deathbed confession, perhaps.
Well, let's hope it's not deathbed.
Or conversion.
Yes. Well, yeah, we wish him a long, prosperous life.
You said that.
Yes, I did.
This is Glenn Klein Online. That's Michael Williams. This is the Gospel Revolution. Spring and Summer Flash Drive for 2009. We're in the stretch run now, and the last webcast for the pledge drive. We still have time to hear from you at 1-800-460-260. And we would love to hear from you if you're listening live and it's about 20 minutes after 10 o'clock on Wednesday night. You're listening live. Let us hear from you tonight. 1-800-436-3260. If you're listening on the archive, as Jeff normally does, we're asking for your contribution this week and always. All you got to do is go to gospelrevolution.com, click on donation, and do your best. For gifts of $100 or more, you will receive free and postage paid the 6-CD series in the twinkling of an eye, A View of History. And that will go towards our goal of $12,500 over these 21 days as we endeavor to meet the needs of the Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams Ministry. Right now, we are at $7,645.17. Yes, somebody made a contribution of $20.17. David Johnson, as a matter of fact. That brings us to $7,645.17. Somebody made a contribution of $5,000 as an anonymous contribution. Well, we want to thank everybody who's participating tonight and who's participating during this pledge drive. The monthly donations, Michael, is really the lifeblood of this effort and this ministry. And don't think that any gift is too small, too large. We're thankful for everything. And it all goes into the same kitty as we try to, and we're succeeding in getting this message out. And that's what it takes. Jeff recommending the webcast and the archives to people who are still entrapped in legalism and slavery and Christianity. Yeah, I think that your point about that your heart really goes out to the Christian community, that's our main audience.
Yeah,
our people that adhere or try to adhere to the Bible, unsuccessfully, of course, because nobody could be successful in that. And we endeavor to reach those people who are looking for answers.
And, you know, it's just like with Jeff. The ones that we have answers for are those who try to do it the best and put the most sincere heart effort into it. We half-hearted Christians, Glenn. It's like, yeah, well, maybe, and yeah, well, I know he says that. I know the preacher says that, but yeah, you know, who cares? I'm going to do this and do that. Those people, those folks are not the ones who are prime real estate, if you will, for the gospel fitting perfectly in their hearts. The one thing that always amazes me is that the ones that we reach, Christianity teaches that they've got to teach it good, hard, and strong, and just exactly right, and get everybody indoctrinated so that nobody will be able to peel off the sheep that are uninformed. We don't get uninformed people converting to the gospel away from evangelical Christianity. We get informed evangelicals converting to the gospel. And it is not the uninformed.
Why is that?
Well, it's because... because if you see somebody that is half-hearted about it is still thinking, well, if I did it right, I could probably do it if I did it right. But see, we all did it right. And all the avenues shut down as they are supposed to. See, when you teach the gospel from an aspect of that it is based on the teachings of Jesus, that's the ones that I love to get a hold of, because those are the most condemned. Those are the ones who believe in Jesus the most, trying to love him, and as Jeff said, trying so hard to believe in Jesus, and trying to believe that Jesus was the Son of God, and he found out that he absolutely could not bring himself to do it when he was honest with himself. But it's that whole it's the issue of that the one given to the breast to fill. And what Christianity is, by teaching the teachings of Jesus, they are teachers of the law. And as Paul said, they do not know what they say, and they do not know what they are affirming. They are affirming the law. And to the ones who are taught it the best, the ones who are in Sunday school, they're in church on Sunday morning and Wednesday night and Sunday night, and they go to all of seminars and revivals, and they're on the deacon board or whatever. These are the people, the ones that are most dedicated to it, the ones that carry their Bibles, the one that memorizes their Bibles. Because when we bring the information of the gospel in, they've got enough information to where that it now makes sense. They've lived it out the other way to where it don't make sense. And they're desperately looking for a place to put everything they know without an eye. And here in the gospel, not only, and it's just like Jeff said, you become a stronger believer after you understand the gospel. Once you're freed from evangelical Christianity, you find out you're a stronger believer now. What you were required to do, now you are so, you're not only free to do, you do. You don't know why, but you just believe this. It's like intuitive. It comes from the heart. It is truly a heartfelt belief.
Well, we're coming to the end of night number three of the spring and summer pledge drive of the Gospel Revolution. And now we've had two callers in the last couple of weeks that have owned up to the fact that they have not been able to keep up with their pledges. You cannot tell me anything that asks for a pledge drive or for specific pledges that would have people own that.
No. Can you imagine that happening on the 700 Club?
No, I don't.
Yeah. Pat Robertson come out, oh, hey, listen, we got somebody here that has said that they haven't been able to keep their pledge, and we just want to encourage them and say, you know, hey, that's a sign that what we're doing is successful. You're able to be honest about it. So, not going to happen.
Well, we're at $7,645.17. That leaves for the next 7 days $4,854.83 to raise. I don't know. We've been doing these pledge drives for about 2 years now, and I don't know that we've ever come short of a pledge drive goal.
Yeah.
And somebody out there can write one check for $4,854.83 and not miss a beat. Obviously, the economic times are tough all over the world, but we have listeners all over the world, and somebody can
Absolutely.
Make up the difference in a heartbeat. And
the one thing I want to reiterate to people that I believe with all my heart, and that is that God does not support anybody's ministry. It is people from the goodness of their heart and the persuasion of their heart to that they jump in and begin to support. So if we have anybody out there that still has that religious bone left in them saying, well, I'm not going to do anything because, you know, the Lord will do this, the Lord is not going to do it. God does not support ministry. People support ministry.
Must have been the thing that allowed Paul to make such a strong appeal for financial support for his efforts.
Yeah, to the point of shaming them, which we've never done. And so I guess we've got one up on Paul on that one. But anyway, Paul shamed them. Paul shamed them for receiving the gospel and then not bearing their, what he called their own burden of the financial responsibility for taking care of the needs of the gospel, for sure. He never mentioned tithe one time. And I think it was that freedom that gave him that type of boldness. I think you're exactly right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it was for freedom that Christ set us free. So we're asking you freely tonight to participate in this effort. Just go to gospelrevolution.com, click on donations, and please make sure that after you make your best effort at gospelrevolution.com that you email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com and let us know what you did so we can include it in part of our goal. We'll have a full report next week as to where we stood, where we stand, and that's it, Mikey.
We did it, Glenn.
Well, we very much want to thank Jeff Robertson for his participation tonight, Michael Kolb calling from Florida, Jeff calling from Tennessee, Michael in Houston, Glenn Klein in Tampa Bay, Sean O'Halloran, our engineer and producer, and call screener and pledge taker extraordinaire. Until next week, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!